Are we living the most real life possible? I ask myself this question all the time. Most of the time, the answer is, I just don't know. Sometimes the answer is, definitely not. This is why I have this podcast. I'm Matt Bodker, and welcome to the show. Before we get started, I want to let you know I rely heavily on your reviews. So if you could stop on in to iTunes and leave a review, I would greatly appreciate that. If you have an extra couple minutes to leave a comment, I would even greatly appreciate that as well. On top of that, I rely on your support financially. If you can support this in any way, go to patreon.com/LTR, patreon.com/LTR, where you can leave a small monthly recurring donation, or if you'd rather give a one-time payment, you can do that through Venmo or PayPal. Those are all in the show notes. All right, on with the show. Today, I bring on Angie Long, who is a licensed marriage and family therapist in San Diego, California, and who also happens to be my sister, who I adore greatly. We have a great conversation about this idea about the gap, and I really wanted to launch this first meaty episode about this idea of the gap between experience and expectations. This is a difficult part in my own life, and how I approach this gap really changes the way my relationships or the quality of my relationships. So I hope this is as meaningful to you as it was for me. What I hope you get out of this conversation, first and foremost, at least the bare minimum, an awareness of the gap in your own life and how then that leads to a better understanding of how you react in the context of these gaps when your expectation does not align with the experiences in your own life. And then finally, how do we deal with this? How do we shore up the gap? How do we change our experiences if need be? How do we adapt our expectations so that we can approach relationships more realistically and have more fulfilling, deeper, and overall better relationships? Here's my conversation with Angie Long. Okay. Hey, sis, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are
good.
You?
I'm doing well. I'm glad we can have our first show here, bringing my sister Angie Long on the show. But I wanted to chat with her about something. So sis, I've always wanted to say this. Mind the gap. But see, here's the deal. Like I don't know if it comes from our family, sis, but I have no ability to do an accent. So I've deemed an acronym LICT accents. So LICT accents means lower IQ'd dialect. That's my accent. Every time I try to do an accent, it never is in anything. It just makes me sound a lot less intelligent. So that's my best British accent.
Well,
do you have accents?
I do not. And nor do I even try because they come out sounding incredibly goofy and weird and nobody knows what I'm trying to mimic anyway.
Yep. This is exactly it. And so I think it could be partly, sis, that we're from Nebraska.
Yes.
So yes. This announcement, everyone. Don't judge us. But we have good beef. And we have we have an incredible zoo. Do we not?
Yes, the best zoo. And I live in San Diego now, which has a really good zoo, but Omaha holds its own.
Yep. Maybe better. So,
not sure.
A good zoo. And we have an incredible pumpkin patch. So So sis and I and Brian and my family went this fall to Nebraska, and we went to do this. My boys got to see the Valla's pumpkin patch, which if you're ever in Nebraska, outside of Gretna, which is where we grew up, you've got to go to Valla's pumpkin patch in October. It's so fun. It's huge. It's like a little amusement park, but it's good stuff. So we're not here about talk about that. Oh, sis, you have to say something you want to say about that?
And I think we saved ourselves a crazy day because it was really windy that day, and I really wanted to do the maze. I don't know if it was corn or hay, and we were going to do this, and we had your three little ones, and thankfully we didn't, because after we left, we heard that people have gotten in there, and like, it's hours, so it could have been really ugly, and we had a wedding to go to that day. So
you've just set this entire episode up perfectly, because we want to talk about the gap between experience and expectations, and our expectation would have been, let's go to that maze and have such a fun time. The experience is I would have lost one of my children. And his name is Jude, by the way. There's only one we would have lost, and it's Jude. So,
and we may have missed our niece's wedding.
Yeah, totally. So that is a great segue of the gap between experience and expectations. What I want to talk about today, want to chat with Sis about, and just pick her brain as a marriage and family counselor. of how she sees this going on in her own life. But the reason why I wanted to start with this is, man, it just vexes me. So here we are in the midst of a pandemic, and I'm stuck at home. Sis, I think, you know, you're stuck at home for the most time. Your husband, Brian, is stuck at home, and is he going to work a little bit more often now?
Just a few hours once a week.
So life is totally different. And I remember back in January, sis, I had these incredible expectations of school's out for summer, like going to the pool, going to Sammy's graduation, which is sis's son, and doing these great things. And you have plans to go to Hawaii that are still on the docket, right?
They're being questioned increasingly and likely not going to happen, but we're going to go to celebrate Sammy's graduation. And as of now, it looks like we're going to do our best to reschedule, but we've got some time to figure it out.
Yep. So your expectations are slightly being blown out of the water. We're thinking about getting a blow up pool, like literally blowing things up right now and blowing up a pool in our backyard and calling it good for the summer. And I've just realized I struggle with this gap between experience and expectation a lot. I see this all over the place in my own life. I see it in relationships. I see it particularly in relationships where, oh, this cute little guy comes along with this girl and they have this incredible relationship, and the guy and the girl have this incredible idealization of each other. And then one day, it's usually the guy. He does something stupid and he's a butthole, right? And then all of a sudden you realize he's not the shining armor that you thought he was. And there's this big gap between what you expected of him or her and what you experienced. And sometimes people break up just because of the gap and not actually dealing with the relationship at hand. I know I've done this before, and it's hurt me. I see people, you know, trying out great things. Trying out, like, oh, you know what? I have expectations. I'm going to do this great thing. I'm going to start this own business. I'm going to do it. I'm going to start a club. And then you try it. And then oftentimes what happens is there's a setback. There's a gap between what you expected to happen, what you experience. And then what happens? People are like, forget this. Just forget it. This is stupid. It was a stupid idea to begin with. I'm never going to do it again. And they end up quitting, not because it was the wrong thing, but because they experienced a gap and they didn't deal with it in a way that actually can bring some great value. I'm curious, you know, before I want to play this Brené Brown quote, but have you experienced this within your counseling sessions of dealing with people with this almost dissonance between expectation, experience, and they find themselves just overwhelmed? Or,
well, yes, so much expectations, you know, it's really good to be aware of them because they're just there all the time and they're operating. They're almost like belief systems we have. Mm-hmm. And it can lead to actions, like you're saying. If you don't pause and go, oh, I recognize I had these expectations that this would happen, this would happen, this would happen. And tune into how you feel about them, you'll just go to like the default automatic pattern, like, oh, boyfriend isn't perfect, I dump him, is what you're saying, right? Yeah. Is what you've seen. And so, oh, now I feel this thing and here's the answer. But, you know, the reality is in long partnerships, there is no perfect. I mean, there's no perfect individually. And so, you know, yes, this is a big piece, and being able, I like how you frame it, and like recognizing that we have expectations is the first step, because oftentimes people don't even think about that.
Yeah. And I think an important thing is I think you just hit the nail on the head, is realizing that it's part of life to have the gap. That's actually what life is. It's actually dealing with the gap. It's not necessarily trying to have your experience and your expectations be always in this beautiful, harmonious, peaceful reality. It's about realizing that life is all about, yeah, I have experiences and then I have these expectations, and they're mostly, like 99% of the time, there's a misalignment. And then how we respond to that can really determine whether we really do live this real life we want to, or do we just fold up our cards, or just woe is me, or just feel hurt or victim. I want to chat about this. I don't play this part of Brené Brown. It was just on a recent, her own podcast called Unlocking Us, and it was so great. She talks about her own gap. It's a different framework, but I want to bring this into kind of the dialogue and discussion, because when I heard this, I'm like, whoa, I need to hear this, because if there's one thing I can really do harm with is my own experiences dictate the environment around me. So I have an experience. And so then I just respond to like, this is my experience. So this is what I expect. And oftentimes I don't allow the other people to have quite a say in their own experiences. And then I can come off being kind of a little bit of a butt, right? So here's Brené Brown that a few minutes, I want you to listen to this. And I want Sis and I to chat about this. It's really great. Here it is.
Plan. So I have to start by debunking one of the worst myths in the world. And that is the myth that strong lasting relationships are always 50-50. I call BS. That is not the case. Strong lasting relationships are rarely 50-50 because life does not work that way. Strong lasting relationships happen when your partner or friend or whoever you're in relationship with can pony up that 80% when you are down to 20, and that your partner also knows that when things fall apart for her and she only has 10% to give, you can show up with your 90, even if it's for a limited amount of time. Let me tell you where this started for us. When I first started doing a lot of speaking and traveling, I would be on the plane flying back to Houston and think, I just need to crawl in bed. I just need to crawl in bed. Please, God, let me get to the bed. Let me get to the bed. And I had no idea that what was happening at home was that Steve was holding down the fort, parenting our kids, running carpool, cooking, working full time. And he was at home thinking, I just need to get in bed. I cannot wait for that back door to open so I can go get in bed. I just need to close my eyes for just an hour. I need to get in bed. So the back door would open and I would expect him to say, oh, welcome home, babe. Go get in bed. Rest. You've been out there working so hard. I know it takes so much. And he would expect me to say, hey, tap out, love. I'm back. Go get some rest. That is not how that shit went down, let me tell you. I would open the back door. I'd come in and I'd say, hey, I'm just exhausted. And he'd say, yeah, me too. And I'd say, oh, really? And we'd go back and forth and it would turn into a nightmare. It was just a nightmare. And it was like this maybe for 6 months. And one day, of course, the whole idea therapy taught not to talk about situations when you're in the situation, but when you're in a good place. So one day we were feeling close and intimate and connected. And I said, we got to do something about the backdoor fights when I come in from out of town. And he said, we do. And as we started talking, one of us said, you know, when you get back, I think it was Steve. He said, when you get back, I'm at 20%. And I said, that's problematic because when I get home, I'm at 20%. So from that moment on, we started naming where we are. We just absolutely, I talked to him on the phone last night and I said, look, I'm on the edge. I got a solid 15 right now. And he said, I was at 15. I'm up to 40. We got a gap. 15 plus 40, 55. We got a 45 gap to 100.
Okay, I want to stop it there. I think that's the key right there. This idea that, this convicts me so much because I think one of the things I suffer from is communication, especially when I feel like I need help. I need help. Like it's hard for me to ask for help. And I see this really did kind of elevate my sense of awareness of how little I communicate my own experience. I mean, I'm working from home right now. So I'm sitting all day and I hear every 10 minutes, some boy screaming bloody murder, right? There's probably blood. There's something going on there. And so clearly I'm actually much more aware of what's going on with my wife and the kids than when I was at work. But at the same time, here's what I do. I'm done working. I'm like, I'm exhausted. It was nonstop. I want to go upstairs or go downstairs to a nice, clean, properly cleaned house, dinner ready, the boys groomed, quiet, well-behaved. And guess what? It's not that, sis. It is a nightmare. It isn't. And so then what happens? I get frustrated. And then there's the big gap. Like, and this is awakening me the idea. I'm like, this is another issue. And I loved how she talked about, like, instead of just saying, this is, I think, the biggest thing I wanted to talk about. Instead of just thinking, well, gosh, it's all or nothing. It's not that. It's not all or nothing. It's like, oh crap. Well, you know, I only have 20% in, so that, you know, then you get nervous about claiming your percentage because the other person has to take 80, right? If you say you have 20, The other person has to claim, like, so then you have this fear of like, I need to quick say my 10 so that the other person can take on 90. But I love what Brené said, that actually there's more to the story. It's okay. It's okay to have two people with 15%, because that opens like a real discussion, right? Like, then what are we going to do with the 7? I didn't even think about this. Have you experienced this kind of in your own life or within counseling of just dealing with this kind of like gap?
Well, yes. I just love Brené Brown and everything. Books, podcasts, I sort of take in everything that she has. And you're right. This idea of, okay, what if the two of us are at 15%? We're at 30. That it's okay. Like, there's maybe stuff to figure out and do with that, but to acknowledge, like, it challenges these unrealistic expectations and even perfectionism, right? That like, oh, well, as a unit, we have to equal 100. And so, I mean, that's the grounds for another fight. Well, no, yeah, I really am at 20. No, yeah, I'm totally at 10.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so like, if you just drop the idea, then you can honestly say where you're at without this pressure to make up for one another or get to 100% somehow. Like she invites in that, okay, there's other ways. Like, okay, what do we have to say no to now? What do we drop off our list? How do we simplify? How do we make it easier if the two of us are just at 30%? So her communication skills and the way she shares her stories is so helpful, like to think of new ways to talk about things and really helpful ways. You know, like one thing that she said is, and that I find true, so often couples fight about their fights. When you get at sort of underneath the content of their fights, they're often feeling the same thing, but it comes out as, you know, maybe an attack and then defensiveness. And then you're off and running into this Yep. other territory, right? And so, you know, it's so true when you're able to seek to understand, you know, convey what you need to convey and also understand that the conversations are totally different and they lead Yep. to much better places.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I really do suck at this, but I really do see this opportunity and I love this. So I want to talk about kind of the response temptations that I suffer from. And I would imagine other people suffer from this as well, that whenever I have this gap, so, you know, whether it's going upstairs and the house isn't the way what I expect, because my wife had a really hard day too, raising three incredibly, wonderfully beautiful boys who are, you know, 5, 4, and 2. So come with a lot of energy and a lot of destruction. And so it's hard to manage that every single day. And then knowing that we're stuck at home every single day, you know, these are things to consider. So these are the temptations I myself struggle with when I get in this gap moment. The first thing is I know that I give myself the free pass because it's my experience. I can only account for myself. And that's a big issue where like I count and I realize that I suffered a lot today. I had a lot to go. I had deadlines. Maybe I had a bad meeting. Maybe it went bad. Maybe whatever it was, something that was exhausting. And I just think about how hard it was. And then I give myself the free pass, but put a greater sense of ownership on the other person before me. So that's the first thing that I just really struggle with. The second thing is victim mentality. So, you know, my family and I, we have a lot of busyness going on and we just want to break sometimes. Things get hard. And then the pandemic hits. I'm like, oh my gosh, of course, another summer. We can't do what we want to do. We're held back. And so then I'm kind of slipping down to this, like, I'm a victim. Woe is me. Here I go again. This always flipping happens to me. And so I'm stuck in that mode. And then the last one I suffer from is just suspicion and judgmentalism, right? Am I being used so that other people can do so I can do the work, so they can just lay back and relax and have a free ride? Or, you know, does this person care more about themselves and doesn't appreciate me? Is there some kind of plot in the universe to destroy my family? You know, all these kind of things, suspicion, judgment. And I'm going wild with this. And then ultimately what it leads to, which I've seen, is just passive aggression because I'm not communicating. I'm not talking about the gap, the experience, right? What I end up doing, and I'll turn it back to you, Sis, of what you feel and see about this, that I think we're so stuck in expectation mode. We're so stuck. I want to come with you with my expectations and that's it. And then not talk about actually the experience as well and how those two diverge and what's the story that caused this particular gap.
Yes. I mean, you're so aware of your own like processes, like going through these are all like ways of reacting to a difficult day. You're feeling stressed, you're tired, and you just want something to, I don't know, go well or whatever it is. But this, you know, I was sort of thinking and jotting down as you were talking, like the first one you talk about the expectation of like, almost like, okay, I deserve this nice dinner and everyone's organized and that sometimes it's useful to go, okay, it points you to what your needs are a little bit, right? Like what's going on here? Maybe what sort of unmet need is there? I know you're really busy, for example, right? You have a very busy life and you know, this desire for organization is huge for you, right? And so sometimes able to sort of interrupt those processes and go, okay, what else is here? Like, you know, what might I be, because it can guide you into what to offer yourself in that moment or in those moments. And so, you know, just thinking about it, these are really common reactions, right? And you, we're at different places in life. I have an almost 18-year-old who's totally independent, right?
Totally. But, other set of worries.
Right, exactly. Different worries, but yeah. And you're also in like, when you have little ones, like that's the most challenging time for any relationship anyway, because there's so much being asked of you by so many people, right? And so I think that's like, you know, sometimes when you widen the lens and you see, you know, other contributing factors, it helps with what I think is so important, which is self-compassion, which is just like what you said, I've had a hard day and I'm struggling right now, or I'm stressed and I just want this. But I think often bringing self-compassion into that gap between expectations and experience can be really powerful and change create a lot of change.
Absolutely. And I think that gets into what you're saying now about this idea of going inward and thinking about, you know, what's really going on. Now I have a tendency to be in my response temptations, which is this idea, give myself a free pass, victim mentality, suspicion, judgmentalism, but there's a different way to approach this. And this is the whole purpose of this episode for those people who are struggling or maybe just becoming aware of this for the first time, like, oh my gosh, that's it. It's this gap I'm constantly getting run into and it frustrates me and I get to no end, that there's another way to approach this. And I call this like response opportunities. If I had to frame it into two things, it's all about grasp versus gift. I think it's like literally a mindset issue where like the grasp mentality is just trying to hold on, white knuckle your own life, trying to control it, right? Sis, you mentioned this kind of perfectionism, this mentality of just really, I need this. And that's a whole other issue we could probably get into of like, why are we into this? Why are we trying to hold on so tightly? Like I don't know. I have my own theories. I mean, you mentioned my extreme sense of organization, right? There's a gift in that, but there also is a huge cover up. I really think that a vulnerability. It's my great way to like, oh, you want to talk about your feelings? The kitchen needs to be cleaned. Let's knock that out, and then we'll talk about our feelings. Oh man, now it's late. I'm exhausted. Let's talk about our feelings tomorrow. I can see this a lot in my own temptation, but then switching it and doing to the response of opportunities, the idea of gift. So I look at this in maybe three ways by which you can look at this opportunity. The first one is, which I think you were just saying, sis, is self-compassion. And I call it just, it's extension to the other person is tenderness. So there's self-compassion. And then there's tenderness. So self-compassion to ourselves, we've had a hard day. It's okay that we had a hard day. But then tenderness, which I realize is a huge opportunity for myself and my growth, is making the other person's world your own for a moment. It's the same thing as what Brené was saying when she's like, I'm flying in and I'm exhausted. And I expect him to say, oh, sweetie, welcome home. Come on upstairs and just put your feet up and rest, right? There's that expectation. Then the tenderness is just for a moment realizing that, oh, you know, maybe he had a crazy day and there's lots of stuff going on, or my wife has three wily boys and it's difficult. And then allow that dialogue in the context of tenderness. Because when we try to make a stake in the game, I don't think communication works very well. Have you had any success, sis, about putting a stake in the game and not moving?
Well, no, when we're in the heat of it, right? Yeah. Like, yeah. And you try to do something different, it's so hard, yeah. So hard, like mm-hmm. almost impossible. I often tell people, clients, like, I think of it as 0 to 10, 10 being the most extreme of what you're feeling, and 0, it's not present. And say it's anxiety and you're working on that. Well, you start doing things at 2s, 3s, 4s, 5s. If you wait to, like, okay, every time I'm a 10, I'm going to try to learn this new skill to help me with it. It does not work.
Yeah.
It does not work at all. And I mean, so you're bigger, right.
The biggest
start small.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say the biggest image I had in my mind, and I was like, for me, it'd be like, okay, I'm in this airplane in a parachute being asked to jump. Right. I'm looking down and I was like, okay, now let's talk about some really deep things going on in your life right now. I'm like, this is not the time. This is not the time. I'm like, I'm literally going to jump off. My adrenaline is going. I have my prefrontal cortex is completely paralyzed. I have no capacity. So that, I mean, you hit it again. Like, that's exactly it. And this idea that there's a quote, this is a book called Predictably Irrational. I forgot the name of the author. I'll put it in the show notes. I love this quote. He talks about, we simply cannot predict how we will behave in the future when we are in the heat of the moment. Rationality works only outside the sphere of temptation. The only way to uphold our beliefs about ourselves is not to put ourselves in the opportunities to be tempted. I think this has two things going for it that I love. The first one is the obvious, and that is this idea that when we're in the heat of the moment, this is not the time to be able to practice, as you said, being virtuous or being just above repute. It's not the moment. The time to be above repute is way outside those moments. The other side of the coin, I think. So that's one thing I want to put I want to bookmark that and come back to that in just a second. The other one is, this is a great opportunity for tenderness. Because if that's true and you're dealing with someone who's in a state of irrationality, I don't think reasonable dialogue is going to help at the moment. Right. At least if this is true, do you agree, or do you see something? Is this something similar that you've seen in your practice?
Well, yeah, I just think, okay, and this is even personally for myself, when I'm like sort of hijacked emotionally, I have to handle the emotions before I can do anything with the other person. Yeah. Right. So there's this, like, first I have to recognize that it's happening, hopefully. So otherwise there's no, I'm just going to do what I always do, whatever that is in this uh-huh. situation. But so first you have to be able to sort of recognize that and do something to bring yourself down. Like, I think of it as bringing yourself down to baseline. Like mm-hmm. if I try to communicate and I'm like way above what's normal for me, it's not going to come out the way I want. It's going to be reactive and emotional. And so you're right. Like, you know, I'm thinking of it in this situation, like that you've given the example of coming upstairs and you talked about, you had different words for it, but tenderness towards the other mm-hmm. and self-compassion is kind of how I think of that, that when you start to respond to yourself compassionately, what you find grows, well, one, your inner critic gets a little less, which is really helpful. And then secondarily, you have more compassion for others. So when you start, like, there's a whole growing field on self-compassion, and they're starting to really sort of measure it in these new ways. And that's one of their findings, is that, you know, it grows, because some people are resistant to offering that to themselves. They get like, well, no, like, if I'm just nice to myself, which is maybe a slightly skewed way of viewing it, I won't reach my goals or something. But you know, self-compassion is acknowledging whatever's hurting inside, recognizing that it's probably really normal. Other people have experienced this, which is really helpful to bring in. And then sending yourself some supportive messages. And maybe it's just like, may I be kind to myself? Or this is just a moment of pain. I made a mistake. But so when you respond to yourself that way, it shifts everything. It really does. Over time, sometimes it's a practice you have to do frequently, and then you can respond to the other person differently. But you're right. There's this caring for your own stuff first, or at least being aware of it so it doesn't get in the way before you can do it in relationship.
That's important. I think, and I want to talk about that in just a second, this idea of like self-compassion is also dealing with stuff emotionally, but also there's an analytical part of this of if I'm constantly feeling overwhelmed, if I'm beating myself up nonstop, if I'm barely surviving, as I think Brene Brown used to say like years ago, this is not the Brene Brown show, but there's if you're going to bed, always telling yourself like, I didn't get enough done, right? And then waking up exhausted and then repeat over and over and over. You gotta fix the rat race, right? There's something, there's self-compassion, but there's also this, okay, I need to look at my life to be able to deal with this so I don't have this. I create more space in my life to be able to hopefully engage myself, not only self-compassionately, but have space to treat other people compassionately as well. You know, I think of the example of, you know, there are times where I'm always running late from point A to point B. So it's like always running late. And I see somebody who might be stuck on the side of the road, right? I'm not stopping because I don't have the margin to stop. I'm running late. So I just don't even try to help. And I thought for me, that's like an image stuck in my head of like when we create a life that's filled from nonstop, we suck the life out of thinking about the other person because we're just constantly going from one thing to the next. We don't have that space to even stop on the metaphorical side of the road to say, how are you doing? Do you need any help, right?
Yeah. And the reality is all it takes, I mean, this sounds oversimplified, but it's true, is giving ourselves permission to create the space, to slow down, to pay attention and, you know, to pause and make a decision.
Are you telling me my calendar doesn't make the decision? This is like blowing my mind. What?
Well, because you're right. Those thoughts are I'm late means it's like almost puts you in not quite, but like not crisis mode, but whatever's right before that. Right. Like, and so the adrenaline's pumping, you're probably like physically tense. Like there's no room to go, wow, that person needs a helping hand. Like it's almost hard to notice when you're in that state. Yeah. Right. So it's this space, like it's interesting. We're talking about the gap. And I use the word space a lot. And I think of that intentionally for myself. Like when I get strong feelings about something, I try to create some space. And then within that space, I also try to fill it with like self-compassion or willingness to experience whatever's happening. But it is about giving yourself permission to one, like, okay, the gap is okay at times. Sometimes the gap calls for a change and a reevaluation, but I think sometimes it's just okay that there's a gap. Mm-hmm. And so maybe stepping into that gap a little bit is part of what can create a different experience, really, is I think what it does, it creates.
Yeah. And I ask you a question on this is when you're dealing with someone who may be in a moment where predictably irrational book mentions this idea that if you're in a state of irrationality, it's not the time to be able to reason through things. So if you're with someone or you or yourself, and you've already mentioned this, if you're in a state of that, how to have self-compassion, but if somebody else is in that state, sis, and you're a companion, what is the best way to approach this? I mean, we know that it's not like, let's look through this logically right now while you're having a panic attack. We know it's not that. Then what is it? Like, what do you do? What's the best opportunity at that moment to help someone move from without maybe feel like you're dismissing them, right? Like, you know, because I've noticed in my life, you just tell people to calm down, calm down, calm down. That doesn't really fix things. It kind of riles them back up.
Bad idea.
It's a bad idea. So then help me out, sis. What do we do in those moments to help them kind of be able to get grounded again?
Well, okay. So I think a step back is one, are they asking for help to get grounded, right? Because you try to help someone who's not there or maybe doesn't want it from you, right? Or just depending on the situation, it's not going to be effective. So I always start with, I'll go back to starting with ourselves first. Like you're right. When our brains have been sort of hijacked by those old parts of our brain and we're it's all emotion. The point, like, how do you get the sort of more rational, logical parts of our brains back online? Mm-hmm. And one way to do this is through like physical touch. It's grounding exercises, right? Like noticing what you see, what you smell, what you can touch, physically touch, and there are practices to do this. And so I'm thinking you could offer the other person that, like a prompt, like, or like a touch, like it's okay. Mm-hmm. Now, if they're angry at you, I would probably not advise that, right? You know, kind of is
situational. Want a black eye.
Yeah, totally. Like, there's some judgment here that you're going to have to assess. So I think so it might just be acknowledging, like, you're really hurting or you're really upset. People will correct you. If you're wrong, they'll be like, I'm not upset, you know,
totally. Like, okay.
Or, but they'll, and so I think it's just the best thing you can do for yourself in those moments is ground yourself, is how I think about it. So instead of trying to ground them is the word I use. It's about grounding yourself, because when you have that kind of emotion coming at you, that's hard to weather if someone's, especially if it's pretty high, and you're going to have responses and you're going to potentially react and get pulled into patterns that maybe aren't all that useful. So I think the best thing you can do is ground yourself. And I like you do that through putting all your attention in your feet, focusing on your breath, you know, checking in with yourself, slowing down your breath. There's a lot of practices out there for that. But I think that's the best you can do, because it may have an impact on the situation. It may not. But oftentimes when one person is like sort of calm, it can bring like the whole room down into that. Mm. So that's often what I think is the best starting point.
Mm, that's good. So almost like how, just in the same way that anxiety is like a contagion, right? It can go from one person to us. If you're with it, it's maybe that calming sense can also be a contagion, right? If you can be calm and grounded and not be a butt, but just be like really just like peaceful and grounded in assistance, right? That might just of itself might help the other person, which I definitely want to try to practice that.
What we know about brain research, like I'm not a neuroscience expert, but I love to read about it, is like this idea of mirror neurons. Like we can learn through watching. And what's behind this, or a piece of this, is like our brains kind of respond to one another. And so if you think about it that way, creating a state that is more calm, more grounded can be helpful in a situation where someone's very emotionally reactive or charged in the moment.
And a PSA that, like, I've known this in my own life, and Brené Brown talked about it just in about 5 minutes later in the same episode, where she kind of tongue in cheek talks about this idea of, she was in this gap meeting about, I only have 10, I only have 10, there's only 20. And then talking about solutions. And then she tried to create a solution. And then I guess her son or her husband says, well, can you stop, like, basically saying things nice, but looking like you're like vicious, right? So you can't really fake it very well, and that this is probably all the more important to really ground yourselves so that your physical manifestation is a consequence of your grounding, which I think that is that mirror neurons. Because in the sense, as we're looking for, we're looking at how your eyes are squinty and tense, but yet you have a smile. I'm more focused on your squinty eyes, those laser beams that are going to cut me through, not your nice, kind words. And so that comes from the matter of the heart first and when working.
Yes. Yes. It's so true. Like, we can all feel that dissonance, or some people would call it, you know, it's not genuine or it's inauthentic, but there's just like, we feel it because we take all of that in. And so, yeah, I think that's why you start with yourself, because it's going to come out. If you're angry and you're saying, I love you through gritted teeth or whatever it is, like, people still feel that. And so it starts with checking in with you and managing whatever's there.
So it gets to this point as we begin to land the plane, because now the question is, now what? Like, what do you do? Because maybe you do just say, I love you with gritted teeth. So how do you actually change? So here's the last part of this, that actually is the practice. Like, what can we do? And we already kind of framed this. Sis, you talked about this. I mentioned the quote that if we can't fix ourselves in the moment of irrationality, then basically our only other option is to begin to work on ourselves, doing the deep work in the context of our rational moments, which basically means we need to build a habit. We need to build a habit that changes our framework by which we look at things. So I want to propose this, and this is, we mentioned, so one way is what I mentioned is the tenderness, right? Practicing tenderness. I want to go into step two, which is making the other person's world your own. And basically, don't try to practice that, only in the moments by which he or she is is in an irate state. It's not going to work, right? The best practice is in the normal day-to-day life when things are okay, practicing making the other person's world your own. Their interests, your interests. Even if you don't like it. I remember the greatest lines I've ever read succinctly is that the highest call of love is to waste time on another. And I loved it. Like, and the reason why is because, okay, that kind of succinctly said the gem of it's easy to like do something with someone when you like it too. Like, you know, oh yeah, I'll do it because I like that too. I'm a technology geek. If Jan wants to, my wife wants to work on making herself more productive, I'm in. We'll get her OmniFocus. We'll get a bunch of technology. We'll go crazy on this stuff, right? But maybe she wants to do something else that I don't like. To waste time another is to actually what you think brings you no value, but then you enter into the other because it brings them value, right? And you're excited. You're not doing it again with gritted teeth. You're excited because it brings them. So practicing that kind of tenderness of like, you like that. And then actually, maybe, why not go the extra mile and be more excited than they are about their thing for a day? Talk about it more, you know? Practice this in those calm moments. I really feel that if I could do this habitually, it'll begin to change the way I feel, I behave. And then those trigger moments, maybe those peaks and valleys start shortening a little bit, right? They're not quite peaks and they're not quite valleys. Maybe they're not quite as big anymore. And over time, they're never going to be a flat line, but they'll be smaller, right?
Right. Like there's always going to be those situations that we revert to old stuff. Yeah. But you're right. It's just like choosing to practice something new is the key. Is that's how learning starts. We have our old automatic ways of being. And when you practice something new, it's about practicing it frequently. So it can be a minute practice and you do it daily, several times a day, but that's the way to create change. And, you know, I want to share a quote that I love. I know you and I both love quotes, but this is Viktor Frankl, who wrote Man's Search for Meaning, one of my favorite books, but it's between stimulus and response, there lies a space. In that space lies our freedom and power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and freedom. And so you're talking about, you know, that space. So you call it the gap almost, but the key is to be able to recognize when that space is present, right? Like, and realize you have some choice about what to do with that space. And it can be anything. It can be, okay, I'm going to like drop expectations. I'm going to this social event and I don't really want to go, or I think this is going to happen and I'm not that excited.
You mean virtual social events?
Yes.
Virtual.
Right now they're all virtual. So you can just leave meeting. It's much easier.
Totally.
Yeah. But being able to go, okay, what if I just went in with no expectations? I've tried this a few times. It's fascinating and very helpful because you get yourself then to this neutral place or try to stay in there, but you drop that. It keeps you aware of what's happening in your head that's telling you about what you're about, what's going to happen or what should happen. And so sometimes it's about just going, okay, what if I practice dropping expectations? But you're right. It's any little thing that you choose to practice over and over that creates the change.
That's great. I love that idea of, yeah, there are times in which we need to drop expectations altogether and just live, which gets to my second point. Living more in a sense of discovery, which really is dropping the expectations. It's because expectations, in my mind, if I had a visual, like if I had to put an image to it, it's like a wall. And you're setting your wall way out there. My expectation is like out there is my goal, my expectation, but there is a wall. Whereas discovery destroys every wall and it makes the terrain in front of you just wide open. I mean, it's just wide open. There's no end in sight. And I think oftentimes we live in this such a control environment, particularly in the US in our culture. We have it, right? Everything's controlled. We can have air conditioning on in the summer, all these environments. We can make, you know, you can go to Disneyland and visit every part of the world in one circle, right? Everything is so controlled. So then I think in our own minds, we get in this habit of controlling and we need to break out of that a little bit to enter into a sense of discovery. And this really then fights this victim mentality. It's not, what was me? I'm pigeonholed. This is where I am. Now I begin to say, instead of saying, why does this always happen to me? Why I am, I, this is, of course this happened to me again. This always does. I expected this. This is my experience. Why do I not listen to my experiences that I'm just a failure? Right? That's the victim. Discovery then tips it completely on its head, and then ask the other question, what does this make possible for me? Like, where's the gift in this, right? Just that quick mindset. And I want to really encourage people to practice. If there's one thing you practice, it is this. And it's changed my entire life. And there are a lot of times I don't practice this and life gets harder for me because I get in the controlling method. And I had this kind of four-step process. If you want to learn more, you can go to livingthereal.com. And it's about this idea of living more of an ordered, internal ordered life. And you start with a sense of meditation or prayer, depending on your spiritual background, whatever it is, that grounds you into something that's kind of permanent, that seems to be at least outside of yourself a little bit, not just kind of thinking about yourself. Something that doesn't really have, it's called The Infinite Game by Simon Sinek. Have you read that, sis? The Infinite Game? It's a great book, but this idea of that it's the infinite game that we need to pursue, not the finite game. Finite game is like, I want to make this much money by this amount of time or have this much profit and loss in a business. But an infinite game, it never has an end, right? It just keeps going. So you're constantly following that. That's the ideal to work for. And so this idea of having more of an infinite mentality, you're grounded in meditation, prayer, religion, faithfulness. And then from that, you have discovery. You practice it every day. I try to like look at your 24 hours before and find one difficult moment, maybe a small one. And now that you've been outside of it for about a day, just ask yourself, like, where's the gift in this? Like, where's the opportunity in here? And maybe journal about it for like 5 minutes to do that. And then the third step is in gratitude, because then now you have something authentically to be grateful for, because you kind of try to practice discovery and see, maybe you found something, maybe it's not quite as bad, or at least it's really bad, but there might be something here that actually could be a good for me if I really look at it. And now I'm a little bit more grateful. And then finally, the last step is once you're kind of grateful, and I've learned this, sis, man, then you make a small act of generosity towards someone. It just be small. It could be a random act of kindness, of a paying for somebody's latte ahead of you, or what it could be random, but you're practicing getting outside of yourself in a spirit of gratitude. Because man, oh man, sis, I have been around people who've given me things not out of gratitude, and I've learned my lesson. I don't want to receive. I don't want to receive.
Yeah, it feels totally different. Mm-hmm. I could add to it, I love that. Those are all like such great practices for shifting yourself into a whole different state, one mm-hmm. that's on the positive end of things, more mm-hmm. sort of love-based. But I would just add, you start with what's the gift in this. And I think even prior to that, you can say, well, what's the experience? Like, what's happening, to acknowledge that? Yeah. Because that's such an important piece, to sort of be with the experience. And then from that, you can move into, is there a gift here? And then the rest of that can change how you're feeling and your experience of whatever the situation is.
That's awesome. And there's a great spiritual writer I have read before, Ignatius Loyola, and he talks about these kind of spiritual realities. And he talks about how the three elements of like spirituality is awareness, understanding, and action. And I've learned a lot that people go from awareness, and this is whether you're spiritual or not, this completely applies to you, because I've noticed people become aware of something and then they take action. Right? They miss that entire middle point of understanding, of sitting with the emotion. And my finger's pointed at me right now, right? I am the action dude. I'm like, I may not even be aware of it, but let's take action now. And that's sitting with the understanding, like, you know what? That just happened. I need to understand my emotions and just sit with them and be like, I'm feeling this way and it's okay to feel this way. And I'm just going to sit with it and not just take action right now. That's important.
It is. You're right. And I can relate. I think the difference is my job is as a therapist. So I've had to delve into this territory.
That's your thing.
Right. I'd be a total hypocrite if I didn't tune into my own experiences and feelings. Sure. It's part of the job. Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's great. So I really encourage you guys to practice this. I think it's so helpful. When I do this, I try to journal as much as I can. I haven't lately. It's been crazy and it's really my fault. A lot of things I've added on my own plate, and I need to take inventory, which will be the next thing I'm going to talk about in a little bit, of what we can do next. But I've noticed that if we take this time, practice discovery, it really gets us out of that victim mentality. And then finally getting out of passive aggression and communicate out of this practice of filling the gap with goodwill. This idea, okay, now I need to learn to pony up, and maybe it's a gap with someone else, and then I need to approach this gap, this space, with goodwill, right? And that knocks out suspicion, that knocks out judgmental, just obliterates it if you can just sit. And again, you cannot practice this in the heat of the moment, because you're going to be triggered and you're going back to that what is it, the lizard brain, they call it, whatever that thing is, that ancient brain that just triggers, and you're going to get right in there and you're going to really find yourself and very, let's just say, if this is called living the real, it ain't real. It is really bad and ugly, right? So practice that. So what do we do? We're going to land the plane right here. This is the options. And Sis already kind of laid this out a little bit, which is awesome. We have to shore up the gap in one way or another. So how do we do this? We can lower expectations. Sis, you mentioned this of like, okay, I have these expectations that I'm late for work. And so I've got to run. I have these expectations. So one thing, I'm not a big fan of goals. I like them. They're great North Stars. They're awesome, right? You want to set a goal. You want to lose 15 pounds. New Year's resolutions. Raise your hand if anybody's ever has met a New Year's resolution. My hand is down. Like, right? No way. I know. Like, it's fun. It's exciting. It's dopamine. And then I just keep on eating. March, I've gained 15, not lost 15, sis. So, goals don't work. Oftentimes, but I do what I like is the SMART framework, the idea of SMART goals, right? So, SMART is an acronym for specific, S, M, measurable, A, attainable. I kind of like the more other, I like the different A, appropriate. And that's what I'm going to sit on. Is it an appropriate thing for me to be in, right? Should I be adding X, Y, and Z to my life when I have three boys during a pandemic and we're all trying to, is it appropriate for my particular time to maybe do this? Maybe it's not appropriate, right? You need to take a step back and maybe I need to have lower expectations. Or Sis, you said, actually in this situation, I ought not to have any expectations. That's actually the thing that I need to get rid of.
Yeah, because I don't know if it's lower. It's to determine, are they unrealistic? And if they're unrealistic, can I adapt them or drop them?
Yeah, that's good. Because I've had somebody talk about, you know, lowering expectations is maybe a more fulfilling way to live. And it always kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Like I'm settling short, but I like that idea that it's not lowering. Yeah, you're right. And maybe it's just adapting them to your own situation, right? That's perfect. I love that. And then, so specific, measurable, appropriate, which is the main one I want to talk about. Realistic, you know, I'm 42 years old, sis. If I really want to try, I can try to do the Olympics and do the sprint, but I'm pretty sure it's not realistic. I can not even run for anything. So, and is it timely? So I put that in there too. Okay, adapt our expectations. So we either have to do that. But my most important one for me, the one we have the most control is we can not only just maybe modify our expectations, but change our experiences. It goes back. This is, I know, the first podcast for Living the Real, but I have another podcast on it called Pandemic. We've talked about this over and over. Sis, you and I talked about this, the Oz principle, and this awesome framework for what he calls culture. I'll put it in the show notes, the book. Connors is his last name. This idea that experience is the base of the culture pyramid. And then from experiences, we form our beliefs, right? So experiences are so foundational. And then our beliefs move into our actions, and then our actions move into our results. And that's kind of the cultural pyramid, he says. And so these experiences are so foundational. And we can begin to change our experiences, or basically our beliefs about our experiences, by asking different questions, right? Be careful, right? The power of the mind to propose questions to yourself, like, why does this always happen to me? That is not an innocuous question. That is loaded.
Why questions especially? I think the why questions are rarely useful, because there's an element of either, like you called it, like feeling like a victim or criticizing yourself.
Yeah.
Kind of like, why do I keep doing this? Or, I think how you ask the questions and what questions you ask is really important.
Mm-hmm. And I think the best way to break this out is that we begin to change our experiences is going back to the framework of adapting some kind of permanence or spirituality, practicing discovery outside the context of being triggered, right? Really, this practices, it's changed my life when I do it. And I'm a hypocrite because I don't do it that often. And when I do it, it's a powerful, powerful practice to do. But in the meantime, right? So what do we do in the meantime? We're at the end now. And then I think both Sis and I are going to give one practice and we'll end the episode. In the meantime, while that gap is big, you're frustrated, it's wide, you're trying to practice outside of the trigger moments. I go back to what I said 5 minutes ago. You got to fill that gap with goodwill. And the best way to do that is it's not going to happen by itself. You can't fill it with goodwill in the context of the trigger, but you can begin to practice that, right? Habitual training by practicing tenderness, self-compassion. Yes. Self-compassion and then tenderness towards the other by allowing that person to be, have their world to become your own for a moment by maybe taking small steps, by maybe saying something you're not interested in and she or he is interested in, and you actually practice being more interested than she or he is, right? That is a great way to hone in on that awesome practice. Any last thoughts, sis, before we pick something that we're going to commit to for the next 7 days?
No, I think I love your practices. And I'd say just the piece of being with experience is important too. So noticing, just like expectations, like it all starts with what you said, which is awareness. So what are my expectations and what are my experiences when those aren't met? Because that's when we notice them. That's when we notice the gap.
Yeah. And I think highly recommend then, like, I love Headspace. It's my favorite app for meditation. For those of you, whether you're religious or not, it's a great middle ground. He doesn't do anything that's, for some people might think it's wonky or whatever. It's just a good, awesome practice of that really practicing self-awareness. And I love his videos he presents to help you get that imagery of like what he's trying to train you to actually see your emotions as a bystander. Just watch them go by and just name them. And not allowing to put judgment upon them. And that is indispensable practice. So let's pick one thing. So here's what I'm committed to. In every episode, I want to do this because this is not just about the listeners that are listening to us, but it's about me as well. I want to live more in the real. So my commitment is I have not done this. I have a journal template. If you want to know, I can share it with you. I use Day One that has a template that goes through these permanence and discovery. And I have a particular kind of a template I use for emergencies. If I'm dealing with someone at work or a friend or whatever that I'm having maybe not really good thoughts about, there's a gap, I'm experiencing something that I'm expecting, that I go through these steps to reframe how I look at this person. And every day I have to write about it and then make one small act of generosity towards that one person. So I'm committing to going back to that template for 7 days. I have one person in mind that I want to commit to. And I'm going to do that for the 7 days. For you, what's one thing you're going to do to be like 1% better?
I think one thing that struck me is I think I'd like to tune into my expectations a little more, because I know about them when they're like, when they create a problem, right?
Yeah.
But so I think what I'd like to do is tune into, well, what are my expectations and are they useful or not?
Yes.
So I think I'm going to focus on that.
Awesome. Well, we will both report back in our next episode that we're in together. Awesome. Great. Well, thanks for coming on. It's been on chatting with you.
I love talking with you always. Anytime. Awesome.
Great. Well, we'll talk to you soon. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Living the Real. If you want to check out more information, go to livingthereal.com and sign up for my newsletter. If you want to support this podcast, you can do that at patreon.com/LTR, as well as one-time payments at Venmo and PayPal in the show notes. See you all next episode. Take care. Bye-bye. Before you head off, I just have one small favor to ask of you. If there's anybody in your life that you can think of, two people that might really could use this Living the Real podcast, would you share it with them this week? I'd greatly appreciate it. Somebody in your life, like, man, they could just use a deeper perspective, right? Maybe a calling to a bigger purpose, or maybe they just need a better plan in their life. Share with them. Give them the hope that they need to be able to get out of whatever they need to get into, to be inspired to do something great. So if you can think of two people in your life right now who could use a little bit more of a realness in their week, please share it with them. Take care. Bye-bye.